This is Sarah Koenig, host of Serial. We have a new show. It's called The Preventionist. It's about something strange that happened in eastern Pennsylvania. Parents claiming they'd walked into a hospital to get medical care for their children and then were forced to leave without them. Why were these parents suddenly losing custody of their kids? From Serial Productions and The New York Times, it's The Preventionist. Eligible Time subscribers can listen right now on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, so head there to subscribe, or listen anywhere October 30th.
I think this is maybe the worst thing I had this week.
Damn. That's a zero. That's a zero. Not even a
Can we go
five.
Lower?
Oh, negative. It's under zero.
Wow. I don't like this shit
wow.
at all.
Okay, okay. Wow.
Violence. Thank, violence. Thank you.
I'm mad.
Thank you.
Violence.
It's his fault. Give me these nasty he bought these. Snacks.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your other side of the game of weekly cultural review. I'm John Caramonica. I'm the critic.
I'm Joe Coscarelli, and I'm the reporter.
I'm Erykah Badu, and I'm the stripper. Window seat, 2010.
Erykah Badu is here. At some point in the last 20 plus years, Erykah Badu has touched your life and made it better. No. Baduism. Mama's Gun. Worldwide Underground. New America. Architects of neo-soul, but an artist who defies any categorization.
Oh, wow.
Erykah is here on the couch today. We're going to talk about her long career. And then stick around to the end because she's going to walk up to the third floor and we're going to bless the newsroom with a performance. But first, the couch. Bienvenue.
I'm happy to be here.
It's a blessing.
And hats off to both of you.
Oh, thank you.
Cheers.
An honor.
Recently, we had Earl Sweatshirt here.
Okay.
And one of the most recent videos of you that I've seen floating around online is of you and Earl in a studio.
Earl and I were in Alchemist Studio. You know, we've always been friends. Yeah. Always done music together, but we just work all the time.
Sure.
We're both Pisces. We both creatives. We kind of really got together in Al's studio to start with. And it was a session that was part of the album.
The Abby and Allen Project.
The Abby and Allen Project.
With Alchemist.
Yes. This girl with this guy was a bum
boy in disguise. She gonna let him slide. Can you talk a little bit about cross-generational collaboration?
Yeah.
Because I think over the years, many people, whether it's Earl or even someone like Drake, have looked to you and said, I'm indebted to you, but also how can I import you into a little bit of what I do? And maybe I can import myself into a little bit of what you do.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about cross-generational collaboration? And is it different in any way than peer collaboration?
Yeah, it's all peer to me.
Okay.
You know, what we usually have in common is the music itself. And kind of no matter what the age group is, it's kind of, if you feel it, you feel it. There's a certain thing we call that thing. And certain people just have that thing, no matter who they are, what type of music they do. And we recognize that first as fans.
Yep.
Both people.
Sure.
And then we, you know, eventually connect when we both need it.
There seems to be something in particular about the way that young men and young men in hip hop are drawn to you as a guiding light.
Women
as a
too.
Mentor. Women too.
Animals and children.
So you think of it
all
as
all living, breathing things.
What energy are you putting out into the world that attracts all living things to your doorstep?
Honesty, my own truth. And other people are attracted to that, especially when they are. They feel free enough to do that themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We find safety in numbers. You know, people who are authentically themselves kind of gravitate toward each other. It's kind of like Nikola Tesla said, there's sympathetic vibration. If you put two like-weighted tuning forks in the same room, when you strike one from across the room, another one will start to resonate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just how it is. Eventually, you kind of resonate with your people, you find your tribe. And I would say, Earl and some of the other people that you're thinking about, we are from the same tribe of thinkers.
You've been so signature, especially in the post-Mama's Gun period, for seemingly just charting a path that was not maybe what the executives at Motown had in mind,
yeah.
you know? And a lot of people take that path and say, maybe it's a little easier, maybe it's a little bit more lucrative, like who can say? And I think a lot of times I'll interview people, you know, year 10 of their career, year 15 of their career, and they're unlearning what years like 3 through 10 were.
I'll say that entering the music business in 1997, I was about 25 years old, 95, mm-hmm. signed a record deal. I think the difference in some of the relationships with the industry or with the machine is that I already had a finished project.
Mm-hmm.
I was ready to share it.
Baduism existed already.
Baduism existed.
Okay.
And I came to the label on my own terms. You know, I didn't want money. I didn't want fame. I wanted my music to be heard and it to be treated a certain way. And I've kept that stance.
How challenging was that in the late 90s?
Wasn't challenging at mm-hmm. all.
Because they needed you more than you needed them?
I don't know. I think we needed each other, you know. Mm-hmm. But we had a mutual respect. I was signed by Kedar Massenburg. He eventually appointed Motown's president.
Mm-hmm.
And he was already managing a kid named D'Angelo. So he did have a reputation for knowing something about music.
Mm-hmm.
We worked together to make all of those things happen, you know, the way that I thought they should happen. And I appreciate Kedar for that, believing in me. That's the best thing you can have, someone who believes.
Sure.
That's the hardest thing to do, you know, when you're a leader in any kind of way. Get the people to believe the way you believe. And when you have that, you begin to trust and you can create even more.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was the key, the trust and belief that we had in one another.
Baduism was designed to get you high. Baduism is lighting my incense, lighting my candles, knowing the creator, knowing myself, feeling them both, understanding, building bridges, overstanding, destroying bridges. Those things are Baduism. It's not a religion.
When you were making Baduism outside of that system,
yeah.
what were your sort of lodestars? Like, what were the things that you're channeling and saying, I need to be in dialogue with blank? What is that?
When I was making Baduism, I was making it in my grandmother's spare bedroom
mm-hmm.
with my cousin, Free, who did all the production.
Right.
And we didn't have any thoughts. We were just doing what we wanted to do. We did it because we had to.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of way. You just kind of have to get these things out. And that's the way we did it. And I didn't really even know I was a singer until Baduism.
Because you were rapping as well.
I was rapping before. Yeah.
And even before that, acting.
Acting before that. Hoeing, but we're not going to talk about that part.
Later.
I'm joking because people take shit serious. I'm going to tell both cameras.
Look at each camera.
Don't start no shit.
Four cameras.
Three. Four. But yeah, we were doing that already. We just like making music. And yeah, I don't think it was just a really big aspiration to be in the music business. We were both college students.
Mm-hmm.
We were sending cassettes back and forth from our universities. He would send me a cassette tape of music and I would send it back to him with some vocals. And we just kind of enjoyed doing it a lot. I think that that is what makes other people really attracted to it. There's no gimmick. There was no,
mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of thought put into it. The music was the main driver.
And also on that album, you really, sometimes I feel like you hear an album and you feel the touch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the touch of the hand on the instrument. And I think that first album specifically is a touch album. I mean, and Mama's Gun is as well, but Baduism mm-hmm. to me is so tactile in that way.
Yeah.
And it's very striking in the mid-90s as all the other things are, I think, moving away from touch.
Yeah.
Everything else that's happening kind of in the mainstream, in the hip-hop mainstream, and even the R&B side.
Yeah.
To have something so almost physical. And I wonder, when you were looking around at that time, did you even think about commercial ambitions or think about the broader questions of where does your album sit amidst the glitz and glamour that's happening right next door.
I did think about those things. Yeah. You know, yeah, of course, I thought about those things. And at the same time, I knew I had something that was not like anything else.
Yeah.
So that gave us a, I guess, a confidence to continue to create in that stream.
Yeah.
There was nothing else happening like it. I didn't know how quickly it would be understood and picked up.
This is the perfect time to pull the prop out from the personal library.
Soul Sister number one.
A great interview by Greg Tate, the great Greg Tate.
Greg.
There are some magical quotes in this interview. I don't know if you've revisited this interview.
I haven't in a very long time.
One thing that you say in this interview that I thought was so striking, you were talking about your process of vocalizing and said, I used to pretend that I was a horn.
Yeah. I played the clarinet mm-hmm. in elementary school.
Okay.
And it has this really nasally kind of thing. And so does my voice. So I would just always imagine myself as a clarinet. I first was introduced to clarinet from Popeye the Sailor, the cartoons.
Wow.
Really Benny Goodman kind of thing going
on
there.
Yeah, sure. A little swing
Popeye all the time.
The Popeye score.
The score.
Was clarinet based?
Yes. I've always likened myself to a clarinet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this horn phrasing, I think, is the sort of basis of these very early, very lofty comparisons mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. you're getting to Billie Holiday
yeah.
and, you know, jazz and soul singers
right.
from, you know, mid-century.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you were quick to tamp that stuff down. You didn't want to be lumped in with these legends.
It didn't make a difference. I just didn't want them to miss who I was.
Who you were, right.
Because we live in a community of comparison, and that's what we do.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to make sure that, wait for you.
Don't bury me under that,
that's
basically.
Right.
Yeah.
You mentioned mm-hmm. D'Angelo. I think he was someone similarly who was dealing with
yeah.
the weight of comparison
mm-hmm.
and the weight of history and
yeah.
where he fit in that lineage, especially because what you guys were doing at that time in the mid-90s was seen as a corrective or a response to a lot of what was happening in
yeah.
hip-hop and R&B at the time as
sure.
it became more commercial and more digital and more based in, you know, earthly possessions.
Yeah.
And, you know, you guys sort of come in as this crazy pendulum swing towards
yeah.
the spiritual, towards
yeah.
the Afrocentric and the mm-hmm. Afrofuturist, mm-hmm. again, looking as much forward as you're looking back.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that early kinship and
sure.
how exciting it was with D, with Questlove, you know, and the whole
Quarians.
The whole scene, the Soul Quarians,
yeah, James
whole,
and everybody.
The whole
yeah.
scene that
yeah.
you guys then crystallize and coalesce around these shared ideals.
I first met D'Angelo's music. I was working in a coffee shop in Dallas, Texas called Grinders, street called Greenville Avenue. And somebody was playing D'Angelo's new album, Brown Sugar.
Mm-hmm. The debut.
And I heard it and I was like, what? You know, and it was just so refreshing to me because I was also, you know, working on music and really wanted to I wanted to meet him. I wanted to make something with him. And all of this just happened serendipitously. Yes, serendipitously. mm-hmm.
John's good for that. Anytime you need a word.
You're good for it. I just can't say it with these teeth.
That's all right.
Lee. Yeah, it happened like that because the next month I went to an event called South by Southwest.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everybody who gets started kind of starts there
mm-hmm.
in that era. And I played some songs and I was passing out my demo. It was a cassette tape and a white binder, 3-ring, with some typed out lyrics and photocopied pictures. Mm-hmm. And I passed them out. I only had 8. And I guess I gave one of them to the right person. Her name was Tammy Cobbs. She was managing Mobb Deep.
Wow.
And she goes, I have a friend that I'm going to hand this to. And the friend was Kedar.
How about that?
She handed it to Kedar. Kedar and I started to talk. And then he goes, well, I managed D'Angelo. And I mean, it's just kind of like
Kismet.
at that time, I really thought I was really on the right path.
Channeling.
You know?
Yeah.
It was happening.
You manifested it.
Manifested it. Actually, that's the truth. I believed it really, really hardly. And nobody, I didn't have anyone to kill the dream. You know, I just believed the things I believed and kept them to myself.
Sure.
And they just began to happen one thing after the other. I met D'Angelo. I opened for D'Angelo through Kedar in Dallas. And he signed me that day. And D and I have been in communication since then. We've been really good friends since then.
Sure.
In fact, when we first met Questlove, we met him the same day. It was at the BET Awards in L.A. The Roots had a show, House of Blues, during that week. And we went together to the show. And we both saw a mirror at the same time and got the same thought.
Was he drumming or hanging out?
He was drumming.
Yeah.
He was on stage. Goody Mob opened for them.
Wow.
And Fugees.
What a lineup.
And then The Roots. Maybe The Fugees were the headliner. Mm-hmm. But The Roots play, and when Amir got on the drums, he was a human drum machine. Mm-hmm. He just kind of had quantitism in his chest. And I was looking over at D, hoping that he didn't think the same thing, because we were both...
He wanted it for you.
We wanted it for ourselves. And everyone still does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just that kind of guy. Yeah, that's how we met. And I think he and D kind of really hit it off. And they begin to work on music and...
They had a little bromance. They cut you out?
They had a little bromance. It's fine. But we all kind of got together as a crew when we started working at Electric Lady here in New York.
Sure.
In 99.
Common was working there as well. And Amir was kind of like, we all admired him so much that he was kind of like the godfather kind of thing. We each worked on our albums separately.
Separate studios and separate rooms in Electric Lady.
Right.
Yeah.
We each executive produced our own albums. But Amir's presence was very important to us. His opinions were important. His advice was important. Yeah, we all worked together. I think it started with Dee and him working there, and we all kind of migrated over there and became a little family. I actually lived there. I'm sure the rest of them did too during their stay, but lived upstairs and didn't go home. There's this cat there named Jimmy that was the studio cat.
Uh-huh.
He was the cat that kind of came in, dipped in and out of your session and let you know if the shit was good or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he didn't like it, he would kind of back on out.
So it was Quest, it was Amir's opinion, and it was Jimmy's opinion.
And it was Jimmy's
opinion.
And
they were the deciders.
Yes. Always valued Amir's opinion and Jimmy's opinion. Yes.
So you were working on what became Mama's Gun.
Yes.
Came out in the year 2000.
Yeah.
You'll be on tour for it shortly, 25th anniversary.
Yes.
But I think, again, to go back to this parallel path of you and D'Angelo, he has Brown Sugar come out early, mid-90s.
Yeah.
You have Baduism.
Yeah.
And you guys are making your follow-ups.
Yeah, we used to send each other. It was the dawning of the digital age where we were now using laptops in AOL. Is that the right?
Sounds about right. 99, 2000.
Yeah,
that sounds about right.
Yeah, we were sending music to each other through text messaging.
Through like AOL Instant Messenger.
Yeah, we were doing that. And I was new to it. And I had said, I'm never getting on this guy. I don't want the government in my business.
The idea of you and D'Angelo IMing
each other beats and snippets and vocal snippets.
It's a magical image to.
Yeah, everybody was in on it.
Yeah, to somebody our age. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just kind of talked about who we were and what we loved and who hurt our feelings.
Were a lot of people hurting your feelings at that time?
No.
How hard is it to hurt your feelings?
Very, very.
Has that always been the case?
Always. I'm kind of naive, maybe, and I don't see people trying to hurt my feelings. If they are.
It's blurry in a way.
It's very blurry. I'm a Pisces. It's like everything's underwater. You know,
I don't know much about astrology. That's a Pisces thing.
It's a Pisces thing. You kind of live this underwater, murky kind of thing.
Huh.
I live in my own little world. I don't want to hurt nobody.
You don't want anybody to hurt you.
I don't want nobody to do that, you know?
Is that part of why you took the path that you took after Mama's Gun to not stay as firmly within that system and to kind of, because like what you're describing,
I don't think
to
I was
me,
ever in it.
But what you're describing to me in 99 mm-hmm. and 2000 mm-hmm. is an intense sense of community
yeah.
with these other musicians, yeah. both physical community, but also mm-hmm. I imagine spiritual community, creative
yeah.
community.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point that goes away or fractures.
Yeah.
Did you know it was fragmenting as it was fragmenting? Like in the sense that you're all an Electric Lady and you're just like, we're all making magic.
Oh,
and
no,
then
we
one
never,
day you're not making, you're not all there.
I don't think we
anymore.
Ever fragmented. I don't think it was ever planned to do any of it.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of became that way.
Do you think a narrative was imposed on you?
No.
No.
I think we did an article in Vibe magazine once. It was Questlove's interview. And he just wanted to invite people.
Yeah.
And the people he invited happened to be the people, us. And that's when That's when the label came.
Yeah.
And none of us were upset about it at all.
Mm.
And we did love and work together a lot. It's like coming from high school, college, you have your people, you find yeah. your tribe, and you look for people who are similar to that, kind of same sense of humor, same music taste.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's why we came together.
Can you talk a little bit about the non-musical aspects of that era? I know
yeah.
you were living in Fort Greene, like mm-hmm. obviously incredible time to be living in that part of
yes.
Brooklyn, late 90s.
Changed a lot.
It's very much changed a lot. But, yes. you know, I remember the parties were great. You know, it's like this
oh,
was
yeah.
a magical time to be in and around that part of Brooklyn.
When I moved to Brooklyn in 1995, right after I signed with Kedar,
mm-hmm.
it took a couple of years before my music came out.
Yeah.
And I got to be immersed into Brooklyn life. At that time in Fort Greene, it was all dreadlocks and head wraps.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a beautiful scene, poetry and music and creativity, kind of the dawn of, I love what I do, but I have nothing to prove mm-hmm. type of thing.
Yeah.
And it was a magical time. It was only my second apartment in my life. And it was a party of one. I still have the same apartment.
No, you kept it?
I've heard that.
I just came from there.
No way. Right
now. Incredible.
Yes, way.
So whenever you come to stay in Brooklyn, you go back to your same apartment from 1995?
Yes, I do.
Wow.
Has it changed? Have you?
A few bulbs, maybe.
Any plants that have lasted the whole time?
I have one. Her name is Earth, and she's a cactus.
Amazing.
And she just died.
Sorry to hear that.
She just died.
To Earth.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Last year, she died.
I've heard you say over the years that you're a touring artist, not a recording artist.
I'm both, but I prefer touring.
This new album, that Abby and Alan
yeah.
with Alchemist, the mm-hmm. producer, is your first official album in 15 years, essentially.
I have nothing to say. That's why I don't. I record when I have something to say. But I'm a touring artist. I've toured for the past 25 years. Mm-hmm. For 8 months out of the year. It's what I do. It completes me. But when I have something to say, I write an album.
How do you know when it's time to get off the road and into the studio?
It's never time to get off the road.
Is it because of inspiration or is it because you feel at home in the kind of...
I'm from the theater. So I feel very at home. It's my therapy. I'm not wrong in that place in front of that mic.
Mm.
I am accepted and applauded. Everything you want when you put your picture on the refrigerator.
Yeah.
You know, you never expect your mom to say, oh, look at this line. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is, the work is received in the spirit in which I give it. And I enjoy my time. And I love singing. Vibration feels good to my body. I love it. But there's never time to get off. But I do know when I have something to say because it means I want to get in the game. To me, it's a sport. The recording business is a sport.
And when you say get in the game, you mean you might hear something that somebody does
inspired.
I got to go. Like, it's go time.
I'm going to get in the game.
What was the last thing that made you want to get in the game?
Alchemist Beats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Alchemist Beats.
Talk a little bit about Alchemist as a producer and why he was the right partner for you in this moment.
Yeah.
And how many copies of the Hooligans album do you have?
I have one.
Okay. Everyone should have one.
I have one. Signed by Alchemist.
I should hope so.
I've always been a big fan of Alchemist, particularly underground hip hop.
Yeah, sure.
I come from that era and from that land. And I love The Realist forever. And I always wanted to sing to it. And I finally tried, maybe a couple of years ago, and I couldn't really think of anything. But when we finally got together, he invited me to his studio, and I recorded it in his studio. And I was like, okay, well, you got another, and another, and another, and another. And it just happened. It's nothing that I could have planned or asked for. I couldn't have asked for a better gift. Alchemist seems to wake the dead in us as musicians, as I've seen him do with many people in our time.
Mm-hmm. What was it like to go back to your sort of hip hop roots in working directly with an underground rap producer, as you say, as opposed to a band setup?
I'll tell you, there's no difference. Baduism, Freeza, hip hop producer, Mama's Gone, Jay Dilla, hip hop producer, and Ninth Wonder and Amir. There's really no difference
between you don't differentiate between live instrumentation.
No, because when we play it live, we still hitting the twos and fours the same way. Mm-hmm. We're swinging the same way as hip hop. It's my root. We're gonna play it like that. I've always done this same thing from New America's Part 1 and 2. They came out in 2008 and 2010. 2008, the whole cast. I had Ninth Wonder. I had Kareem Riggins. Mm-hmm. I had Dilla, Madlib.
The whole crew.
So, yeah, it's always that way for me. I don't think people know that about me as much.
That's why it's interesting to hear you talk about how you see it as all the same, because I think in people's minds it's, oh, it's a rapper and a producer, or it's a singer and a band.
That's right.
And for you, you've always been able to blend those styles. And you were quite early, I think, in being a soul singer, an R&B singer, who had fully embraced
in a hip-hop context. Yeah.
I really hated that I get categorized. You know, no one wants that, because I don't think I do one thing. Mm-hmm. And I certainly don't think there's one song that I've made that sounds like the other. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm always in the specific moment of that music. And the drums come first.
Always.
Mm-hmm. I love the idea of live instrumentation because I am a jazz artist. Mm-hmm. I love the improvisation. You know, I love to make a song, but I like to see how far we can take it live.
Right.
And hip hop is my roots for sure. Even from Dallas.
I have to ask, who in your mind is the best rapper from Dallas, not the DOC?
we'll leave aside the
DOC from this conversation.
Okay.
But who are the rapper, either the rapper or the rappers from Dallas that you're like?
The Coles is like in Dallas. I would say the Coles in Dallas, besides the DOC, would be this kid named Cole Chris.
New, recent or old?
This is older.
Okay.
Cole Chris was in a group called Mad Flavor. Mm-hmm. He was like the first artist to be signed to a major record deal, Priority, in Dallas.
Yeah. Wow.
And then DOC was next. But Cole Chris, wordplay, voice, cadence, rhythm, taste, everything. He's just amazing. And Cole Chris and I work together to this day.
Really?
Like my whole crew that was with me then are with me now.
Right. Did you feel like Dallas, especially back then, was overlooked in the broader hip-hop conversation? Because even a lot of people identify the DOC more with NWA and Los Angeles. Like, and there have been many generations of Dallas artists subsequent to that. But at the time that we're talking, the late 80s, early 90s, did you guys feel like overlooked? Were you like, well, there's New York, there's LA, maybe there's Miami,
No, Atlanta. Not really. We really knew where the nucleus was, where the mecca was. You know, hip-hop was something that was lived. You know, in New York, it was a language, and it just got picked up everywhere, and it has many dialects.
Yep.
And we formed our own thing, you know, because hip hop comes out of necessity. You know, we have to do this. But no, I don't think we felt overlooked.
You were reverent that you were in somebody else's tradition.
We knew that.
Yeah.
But we were creating our own things, and they didn't hear that part. Yeah, I think that's what Andre 3000 was saying.
But it's like this, though. I'm tired of folks, you know what I'm saying? The closed-minded folks, you know what I'm saying? It's like we got a demo tape and don't nobody want to hear, but it's like this, the South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
Hi, I'm Juliet.
I'm Joel. We're from the New York Times games team.
And we're here talking to fans about our games.
What's your vibe when you're playing one of our games?
It makes me feel like I'm procrastinating in a really productive way.
It just scratches an itch in my brain.
Do you have a routine?
I'm doing long distance with my boyfriend. We'll call every night and share our screen. We do connections, the mini, and then strands. Always in that order.
Aww. Do you have a favorite?
The mini. We try and get it under 30 seconds. We rarely get it under 30, but that's always the goal.
Folks will really time themselves, but with Spelling Bee, I give myself all day.
I play it when my kids are going to bed.
Do you guys play together?
My daughter plays. She likes playing Wordle.
If you ever miss a day, there's also archives.
That's so great to know.
And you have it for connections as well.
Lord help me. I'm just going to be doing that all day, every day.
New York Times Games subscribers get full access to all our games and features. Subscribe now at nytimes.com/games for a special offer.
You mentioned the DOC, Andre, both fathers of your children.
Yes.
And there's Jay Electronica as well, another rapper. Obviously, you've been an artist on your own, had agency in your own work for so long. Mm-hmm. Do you ever allow yourself to think of your role as muse? Because so much great hip hop has been made about you and your family, from Miss Jackson to a new Jay Electronica song.
I don't
these
think
albums,
Miss Jackson
you know.
Was actually about me.
Is that true?
I don't think so, but people say it.
About your mother, then, more specifically?
Well, she thinks it was about her.
Well, then that's...
She got the bumper sticker and the airbrush t-shirt.
What does the bumper sticker say?
Miss Jackson. I mean, the teacher says, sorry, Miss Jackson. You know, she has.
I mean, that's one of those things where I think if you think it's about you, it is about you.
Right.
That's.
But I can imagine how it would sort of turn your mind upside down to think of yourself as not the artist, but the inspiration.
I think I inspire artists. I do. I think I inspire many things just the same way I was inspired when I was young. The same way. I do. I think the reason why I inspire things is because I am just either oblivious to rules or they don't really sway me. I'm not afraid of it, you know? So I think that's why I'm inspiring. Mm-hmm. I can be completely myself. You know, I know when to pull back, of course, but I am not afraid to do that. And I don't think anything is going to bad is going to happen if I just be who I am.
And you think you allowed those men that freedom in their connections with you?
I think they were on that path already. That's kind of why we sympathetically vibrated together. Mm. And we each had something to share with one another.
You were inspired as well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No accountants in terms of your romantic partners and, you know, you've chosen artists. And I imagine on some level,
no
accountant. I'm sorry. Sorry to the accountants in the audience.
We don't know if she's dated an accountant.
I don't know.
Have I dated an accountant?
I don't know. I'm just simply saying.
All artists.
Cheated with one, but never.
Okay. All right. Accountants out there, there's hope.
Never. not in public.
Tell me, though, about what is it that you're looking for? Because obviously, as Joe's question says, there's inspiration that you're offering people. But what is it that you're seeking in a partner?
In a partner?
Yeah. Tell me about that inspiration.
Yeah, throughout time, it was a different thing.
It depends on
what I needed at each stage. I remember picking a boyfriend at a really early age, maybe 5.
Okay.
You knew what you needed.
Yeah, I wanted to date Bobby because he could make a gun noise with the milk carton when he stepped on it. I was like, oh.
That's my guy.
God, King.
I love Bobby. And at that time, I didn't know I was looking for masculinity. That's
right.
What it was. Mm-hmm. I was just like, in partners throughout time, I remember meeting Andre and we just had a lot in common, you know? Mm-hmm. We just kind of, I thought he was very handsome and very talented. And me, like everyone else, was a big fan. Outkast. And I think at that time I was looking for camaraderie. because it was the beginning of my music career.
You're walking this path.
Yeah.
You wanted someone who was also walking the path.
And who had the freedom to hang out, you know, and the accountant didn't.
Accountant had to clock in. Andre worked his own hours.
Yeah, so throughout the thing in common that each of my partners have had was the freedom to travel or make music wherever they wanted or to create.
Talk to us a little bit about your kids. I know Seven was a producer you worked with.
Seven was no parts of music or
he's done with that.
Entertainment at this point in his life. Mm-hmm. Seven is a professional student. Seven is in school, getting another degree.
He's studying what?
I can't really tell his business.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, if that's okay.
Secret degree.
It's a secret degree.
Secret degree.
But it's another one.
A common field.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he doesn't have a desire to be in the limelight.
Was that a relief to you?
No. It doesn't matter to me. I just want them to, you know, do what they do. Mm-hmm. I'm the guardrail. Mm-hmm. You know, their fathers are the guardrails. We can't not possess them, just protect them. Mm-hmm. But, Puma is a creative. She's an artist. She's exactly what I deserve. That's what my mama told me.
That's what grandma said?
Yes. And my daughter, Mars, is 16, so she's still kind of finding her way, but she loves animals. Mm-hmm. We have, like, pets everywhere in the house.
Like what?
Two bunnies, two birds, now two cats.
Animal kingdom.
Animal queendom.
There you go.
Yes.
Your touring path has obviously kept you fresh for many new generations.
Yes,
everybody we talk to about you is a fan from, 15 to 65.
Okay.
Everyone has their own entry point with you.
Yeah. I think
another entry point that's kept you fresh in this period of not releasing that much new music is your online presence, your social media.
Yeah.
You're a chronic poster.
Get your money. Don't forget to get your money. And when you get your money, bitch, bring me the money.
I mean, it's
terrible. Well, from Twitter to Instagram, very beyond.
Yeah. Extremely active.
Very active.
Funny. Is that where you express your comedic side? I know you've been in movies
so
here
far,
and there.
Yes.
You were in Taraji's What Men Want.
Get it down. Sip it. That's just jasmine tea. If you don't count the weed and the peyote.
Crack.
I was just kidding.
Actually, Taraji recommended me for that. Thank you, Taraji, for that.
But you haven't acted that much, given that your background is in theater.
Yeah.
Do you see social media as a marketing tactic or as a playground for that side
It's a
of
playground
yourself?
That happens to also be a marketing tactic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, whether people were looking at it or not, it's kind of like therapy. I get on there and have fun. And it just so happens that it keeps me present in the business as well.
Does it ever get you in trouble?
Not recently. I've learned who the audience is, you know. Mm-hmm. But yes, it does get me in trouble. There's a Erykah Badu problem.
Which is, how would you describe the Erykah Badu problem?
All I talk about is peace and love and forgiveness and kindness and this. And somehow that makes me the center of hate.
You think?
Yes.
How
it,
so?
It did a while back because I didn't know what to say and when,
at
certain points.
I was interested in this. You had a period where you were very interested in having public conversations about radical empathy for people who had been considered cultural villains.
Untouchable. Yes.
Bill Cosby, R. Kelly, Louis Farrakhan, et cetera. And you were speaking openly and seemingly from the heart about this idea that hurt people hurt people and that you wanted to sort of look for the good in the biggest villains in society.
But I quickly learned that people don't like their hate interrupted. And I kind of knew that that wasn't the right audience for that type of conversation. Mm. Unless you want a debate.
And you didn't want to debate at that point.
No, not really.
Now.
I didn't mind it, but I think it's a waste of time, if you're speaking to people who can't see you.
And how has your thinking on that subject changed or evolved now that the cultural and political shift has happened? There's been a huge response to this idea of, woke, which we'll get right. to your role in if you'd like to talk about it. But this idea of, you know, the political pendulum, the cultural pendulum has swung back hard. Does that change your stance to in this radical empathy conversation?
People have become more and more and more angry and opinionated and offended. My friend James calls them the offendocracy. People who are waiting to jump out the bushes to, caught you saying this or that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they...
On all sides, you
on
think?
On all sides, yeah. Can't wait. So you just... I just learned that I'm not having a conversation with friends at dinner. I'm having a conversation with people who have decided to like you or not. And I don't think as an artist, I really don't have to do that. I don't feel strongly about anything that would lead me to damaging the gift that I've been given.
Your career.
Yeah. There's nothing. Yeah. Not on that platform.
Mm-hmm.
Not
on social media.
Or in interviews.
That's not the place. But there are places that I can make a difference. And I do.
Do you think in the abstract, we as a society are not empathetic enough?
I think everybody is as empathetic as they should be.
Which means what?
It's not a race. Everybody doesn't have to have the same amount of empathy
mm-hmm.
at the same time. And if it's true empathy, that means you've learned something.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think everyone should have to be measured by the same ruler. I just know that I'm a very sensitive being. I know my audience, trees, birds, wind, rain.
Mm-hmm.
I feel very comfortable and happy speaking my words and my truth in that direction.
Something else you said in this Vibe article that actually feels maybe newly resonant.
Okay.
You said, this is 1997 we're talking, and you
okay.
said, being righteous is popular this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and every year since.
Well, so here's my question.
Or
number
not.
One, number one, do you think that being righteous has remained popular? And number two, do you still feel, because I assume the subtext of that sentence is that you felt that you were advertising or offering a certain kind of righteousness. Do you still feel righteous?
It's an aesthetic, actually.
You think?
Yes, I do. It's an aesthetic that comes with its own theme music and language. And I think it starts with the way you look. People would consider people in 1997 who wore head wraps or poofies and mm-hmm. those types of things as being righteous. So I think it's an aesthetic that comes with its own theme music and time period. People are very embracing of me, younger people.
Yeah.
In this era, it's been a cycle of 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think it happens every 25 years. Mm-hmm. We go back kind of to the root of whatever that was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because those children are now 25.
Yeah.
Same thing happened with me. When I came into the business, I grew up with Earth, Wind, and Fire and The Emotions mm-hmm. and Donny Hathaway and Pink Floyd and Charles Mingus, you know, these positive things. And that's what I listened to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I became as an adult.
So that's what you brought back at your 25-year mark.
It was the least I could do because it's what inspired me.
And it's the aesthetic was important. You felt like, do you feel that the aesthetic was important because in essence, people are both buying with their eyes, but they're also listening in a weird way with their eyes.
Yes.
And so you wanted to telegraph something to identify your politics and identify your stance you ever open your mouth.
Not on purpose. That's just the place I was.
Okay.
I went to HBCU, Grambling State University, mm-hmm. Louisiana, and I was around a lot of my peers. We were all studying these same things.
Mm-hmm.
We were excited to uncover and peel back layers of things about religion and
mm-hmm.
Sociology and race and music, wherever that fit in. It was just an exciting period of studying for us. And I showed up as myself. And I continue to show up as myself. Yeah, and where I see that sometimes I'm the only one showing up as myself. And that's where you get in trouble.
We've certainly met plenty of artists who do not show up as themselves, which is a tragedy.
You know? I was referring a moment ago to your role in popularizing the phrase and idea of staying woke.
Mm-hmm.
in your lyrics and in your being.
Yeah.
And even by 2018, 2019, 2020, you were already talking about having lost control of that narrative, of that word, of that concept.
Yeah.
In the 4 or 5, 6 years since,
yeah,
it's only become more of a buzzword, a stand-in. It is, some could say, like the crux of all of the polarization in this country right now. Yeah. How do you look back on your role in that idea?
I stay woke. I stay woke is a term coined by Georgia Ann Muldrow.
Okay.
And Bilal Oliver. We were all working together in Sa Ra's studio.
Yep.
In LA. And I walked into a session of them making this music. I just joined the session. Mm-hmm. And we agreed that the song would be on my album. It was Georgia's words, you know. And when I say it or think about it, woke is just the same thing as consciousness. I'm conscious of everything that's going on. I'm paying attention to people's body language, the foods that I eat, the music that I listen to. Woke is just really hyper aware of what's going on. And that's all it is.
Does that include skepticism?
Elaborate.
Like stay vigilant.
Yeah, sort of like being mindful of not simply attuned to what's happening around you, but potentially to motivations that are not visible and enacting a force upon you.
I wasn't trying to make a statement. I just made a song.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a song describing how I think and feel.
Yeah.
No, I'm not scared. I mean, it's like, I don't have to defend myself. I'm not afraid of death. I mean, I'm sure there's something else. Or life.
Yeah.
And part of living is pain and fighting and healing, one healing and healing and healing after the other. And I choose to do that.
Are you an affectionate person?
Very. Pisces. Triple Pisces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Does that inform your work as a doula?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I know that you've spoken about this a little bit before, about being a doula for birth, but also for passing.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about any similarities between those two processes.
Yeah, they're the same.
Are they?
To me.
Okay.
I feel that my work is primarily, the contract is with the babies that are coming. I want to make sure that the room is peaceful. Everyone has said everything they had to say. The mother is ready to give birth. Father is present. The grandma or aunt, whoever it is. The birthing process and room and space has to be exactly the way they want it for the peace of this is a very important ceremony. Mm-hmm. One of the most important, the others are going the other way.
Yeah.
And I do the same thing with people who are going out. I'm the welcoming committee and the ushering committee. I studied for many years to make sure that I understand the human body and what women actually need and what the fathers actually need. And I took all those things and became a doula. I don't see it as a work of labor. I never charge for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I feel like I have to do, almost like the performing on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Same creative process. Very, very careful. Difference between being a doula and performing is I'm being a doula, I don't say many words at all. You just kind
of in either of the contexts.
Unless, you know, you're asked or
sure. You
need to. But I do with both my grandmothers and many elders and some young people passing.
Wow.
I've been at the foot of the bed for many babies who have come into the world. And the thing, both of those things have in common are peace in the room. The first breath is with peace. Can you imagine if you had that to start life with? I don't know if that's how my birth was, but I imagine that it makes a big difference. And I keep in touch with all of them.
Wow.
To this day. First one from 2001.
Do you see the mission of introducing life through peace and your musical mission as simpatico?
Yeah. Does seeing life and death up close make your music better? Because that's the root of...
Probably. it kind of makes things better, makes things clearer. I think that's where the no fear part comes from, because we don't know where the babies are coming from. We've been mm-hmm. told all this stuff was here before I got here. So yeah. I'm not sure exactly mm-hmm. what it is. And when people leave, I can tell they don't know what's going to happen next either.
Yeah.
But I know that when we do that with an easy breath, kind of similar to, have you ever had a outer body experience, OBE?
I have not.
Like when you're sleeping and you can't wake up.
A waking dream.
You have like a paralysis kind of thing.
Well, yeah, maybe a little bit of that, yeah.
Yeah.
Not I.
You have not?
No.
Okay.
Should I? How can I make that happen for myself?
I don't know. It's kind of like you're so unfamiliar with the energy and the frequency of what's happening.
Yeah.
I've had that so many times that I've learned to breathe easy. And that's the scariest thing in the world. But learning to breathe through that kind of helps me walk amongst people with ease. You know, I'm very careful mm-hmm. because I know people are very sensitive and are worthy of respect and all that kind of stuff. Being a mom helps that too.
Got yeah.
three children who are three different types of beings. It's a very scary thing. You know, you don't want to do the wrong thing, but I've learned through them also breathing. I've taught them how to breathe through things, and I've had a lot of good teachers too. I think breath kind of really helps.
Can you lead breathing. Us in a quick breathing exercise before sure. we jump into our lightning round?
Yeah, you want to?
Wow, sure. Okay. Yeah.
That's it.
I feel amped.
Yeah, it's like an instant reboot.
All right.
Yeah, so before you fight with someone or or anything like that or get into an argument, just go somewhere and say...
Noted.
Yeah, we'll take that note. I'm also really glad you did it. Look, it's like when you were talking about birth, a thing that I often equate with your music, especially the later albums, yeah. I think of, and forgive me if it's a little abstract, but I think of the amnion. I think of, you know, I think of being able to breathe in a kind of liquid environment of a kind of serenity in floating,
sure.
but also kind of like hovering just above that.
Breath is everything.
Mm-hmm. Real talk.
It's the difference between whether you are afraid or not.
Never Thank scared.
I'm not going to say never scared, but I definitely, after breathing, I can do it scared, but I'm brave.
All right. Great. So bravely dive into this podcast deck for our questionnaire, our podcast lightning round.
Okay.
52 cards in the podcast deck. You'll pull them at random, and they correspond to some pre-written questions of a variety of moods. So we'll see. We'll see where the spirits lead you.
All right.
Show me which one you want.
There that you one.
Go. All right.
Okay. What do we got?
Ten of hearts.
Okay. Let's see. A light one to start. Who is a musician that people would be surprised to know that you love or admire?
The people will be surprised.
Yes, the people.
The people.
Try to shock someone right now.
Yes.
Marilyn Manson. Appreciate his intelligence, his point of view, the bravery that it would take to do the art that he does, knowing that he's going to be labeled this or that or this or that. I just think he's pretty brave.
And somebody else whose real life behavior has come into question in recent years.
Serious allegations.
Especially about how it relates or doesn't relate.
And he doesn't break character. Not for you. Yeah.
No, right there with Kanye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pull another card.
And for the record, I am not a devil worshiper, a Satanist.
Either.
Okay.
We got that.
Four spades.
What self-doubt did you have on the way to stardom?
Nothing on the way. I didn't hear anything on the way to stardom. I didn't really tell anybody anything. I started having self-doubt kind of after I was more popular because people have opinions. And
you let that.
And those opinions, you know, they're a force. When there are lots of people, it becomes one organism and they're very strong. So it does make you doubt yourself.
Was that after Baduism or Mama's Gun?
Way after Baduism. Mm-hmm. Way after Mama's Gun.
Oh, okay.
So you didn't begin to feel self-doubt until
no.
a decade into your career?
Yes.
More?
Yes.
And what were the opinion? What were the things that...
Because
by that point, I would think you're
established
so secure and had all this success.
But we didn't have social media. Social media didn't come in to play in a big way until way after Mama's Gone.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe New America's 2008 and 10s.
Okay.
So you think the rise of the internet can correspond with the rise in your self-doubt?
Yes, you don't get to hear all of those things. And
oh, interesting.
You don't get to, So you don't even get to look back at yourself doing stuff.
So the cacophony of social media opened up a wormhole in a way. Did it make you think that those opinions had been there all along and you just didn't know it because there was no feedback loop?
Yeah.
Huh.
That makes sense. Yeah, I did think that. But it doesn't matter whether you know it or not. I'm a sensitive being.
Sure.
So I absorb so much. It's hard not to look at it and read it and think, am I?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that gives you a lot of, gives me a lot of self-doubt. If I can concentrate and focus on that, if I continue to do that all the time, maybe like everyone else, but
no one's immune.
No, no one's immune.
Do you feel like you've triumphed over that? Like, was that a bad stretch of time that you're on? It still exists.
I don't think I've triumphed over it. I think that every time I make the same choice to be focused on that, that's going
to
happen.
Right. Yeah, it's always there if you want to go to that dark place.
If that's what I want.
Yeah.
That's real.
It's there.
If you want to press the bruise, you can.
And do you feel like sometimes you want to press that bruise?
I don't think I ever want to, because if you truly been in pain and you feel sad, you know, because people are attacking you, I don't think you ever truly want to do that. No. If you've truly felt that, no. No, so I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you can't help
it. But sometimes it just happens.
All right, pull another card.
Seven of diamonds.
What's your go-to YouTube video to show someone? What's the thing that you have to share with people, like your friends? What are you texting people?
On YouTube nowadays, there's like this new graphic, and maybe AI, but they usually have people looking crazy with this crazy headline. That's something that's totally not true.
Okay.
This is Dana Brooks reporting live from Ocean View Beach. Just kidding. I'm not real.
But you and Alchemist faced some criticism for using AI for your album cover. What did you make of that conversation?
I had no idea why we faced criticism for that.
I think people believe that creatives, especially professional creatives, should not be contributing to what they see as the death of creativity via machine.
I totally understand how they feel. And I feel that way in some areas as well.
But not album art.
This particular piece of album art was made by an artist who also can draw and sculpt and paint and do many things.
Sure.
So using AI as a tool, right?
Yeah. But I didn't get in it.
Fair enough.
And I'm not getting in it now.
All right. Pull another card.
I personally think AI is
a tool. The AI stands for A-I-N-T.
Ain't in it.
Getting in it.
And I ain't in
it. Hell no. They too mad. Seven of spades.
Do you read your own DMs? Given how active you are, you have many millions of followers.
Right. I'm a self-made person.
Yes. If someone DMs you, you're seeing that.
Yeah, if they're in my main thing.
Right,
what about box 2 and box 3?
Does that exist? Yeah. I don't even know.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Results? You not up on hidden results?
What's that?
We got to show you.
When you get your phone back, we're going to show you. There was a main inbox.
I know there's a main inbox. It says general, and then it says public, maybe?
There's different inboxes.
There's three inboxes on Instagram.
Okay, I just look at general.
What's the last great DM you got?
Yeah.
Maybe Freddie Gibbs.
Mm-hmm. A fellow Alchemist collaborator.
Freddie Gibbs.
Yeah.
Great rapper.
All right, let's pull one more card before we eat a snack.
Okay. Four hearts.
Four hearts.
I got 2 7s, 2 4s.
That's a great hand.
Two pair. You're all right.
You two pair.
Yeah.
That's great. That's the second best hand that's ever been pulled.
You thought you busted, but here we are.
I thought I did.
We had someone pull a full house once, but this is a close second.
This is lucky.
The spirits are with you.
Okay.
Four hearts. I think it's a great way to end. What's a song you associate with love?
Great Gig in the Sky.
By?
Pink Floyd.
That's love to you.
Yeah, truth.
All right, before we let you go, before we see you perform in the New York Times newsroom, Major. Every episode of
That's
Popcast.
Today.
Oh,
That's,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You forgot your homework?
I did.
Every episode of Popcast ends with a snack.
Okay.
It's a taste test. We will rank it out of 10. You are a very clean eater to keep your very clean mind.
Right.
You're a vegan. How long?
30 years.
All right. 30-year vegan. We got you some...
Vegan... What is that?
Vegan chips.
I went to a Union Market.
By the way, that's not vegan food. We don't consider it.
No, of course.
To us.
That's
to,
fun this food. Is what you know,
this is, like, but, yeah. I mean, it's snacks. Vegan certified yes. fun
Y'all
food.
Y'all trying to kill me. Let me see this package.
You didn't have as much to choose from as most of our guests.
It says vegan right on the front.
I like it. Okay.
So explain to people what it is you picked. Read us what you got.
I picked churros.
Churro flavored.
Sweet potato.
Or oven baked. Sweet potato baked fries by Frankie's Organic.
All right.
Non-GMO.
Does that sound fun to you?
Certified vegan.
Does this sound fun? To you.
This snack.
Yeah. This snack.
I don't understand the question.
You said this is fun food.
Does this seem good?
Well, fun food. Yes. We call it fun food because it's kind of not vegetables and
sure.
not right, the ground right. and stuff. So, yes, this would be fun to my kids, yes.
Okay. Your kids also eat vegan?
All vegan?
They started out all vegan.
Okay.
Then they went their own directions around 12 to 14. They traded in my rules for my lessons.
For a Big Mac.
Yeah, for my lessons.
For your lessons.
I'm sure they were doing Big Macs, too.
Sure, sneaking Big Macs. All right, bust it open. Let's try some churro.
I'll take care of it. The rings.
Sweet potato churro flavor.
Yeah, I got these at Union Market. I had a few different vegan chip options.
Oh, right. Yes. We'll take the grill out, of course.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to be really honest. This is not looking how I expect it to look. Maybe I was wrong. I'm going to take
a
couple.
Is it not a Cheeto? It's like a churro Cheeto.
Yeah, I know. I just like didn't think it. I didn't think it through. Oh, I didn't smell.
It's got the sweet smell.
It's a sweet snack, right? Churro flavor.
Is churro sweet?
Oh, yeah.
Cinnamon. Yeah, like cinnamon.
Sugar and cinnamon.
Ah, I don't like this. I really don't like sweet stuff too much.
At all.
Except for tea and
you
stuff.
You remember when Taco Bell had churro bites as their dessert?
You're a sick baby.
I missed the whole thing.
I bet.
I don't know if I want a sweet.
I could eat this.
I don't like sweet breakfast or anything like that. You know, like it has to be savory for me.
It doesn't not taste like Cinnamon Toast Crunch, but it has a little sweet potato aftertaste.
This makes me go with a little tequila, maybe.
I mean, my take on this is a good version of an unpleasant thing.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, I do not in any way wish to eat a thing that has this consistency, has this texture, even has this flavor profile.
Yeah. I like it.
But I don't dislike it. You're about to,
you like
you're
about
it? To murder I'm about the to bag.
Kill the back. It's a Leo thing.
Apparently.
It's
good.
No, this ain't it.
You didn't even take a bite.
This ain't it, y'all.
What do you think of the smell?
I don't know. It's like a...
Delicious.
You want to try cinnamon. A different vegan snack?
No,
you want
come
a vegan
on.
Chip?
This is great. We're going to rate
all
this.
Right, we did it the right way.
You want another?
You didn't even bite. You just gave it a little tongue?
Gave it a little
John,
tongue.
You want another?
No, but you didn't do one crunch through with the teeth? Come on, one crunch through.
Wow. Yeah. Not in.
No.
You going to rate it out of 10? You going to give it a big old zero?
I don't want...
Look, we
Frankie,
no sponsor.
Frankie like,
we,
that's
we,
okay.
We do. We do.
I'm
yeah,
not
we
trying
do
to hurt Frankie's stuff.
No, this is not Spawn. If you here's what I think. Snacks are like albums. You put it in the world. You're opening yourself to a range of opinions.
It doesn't belong to Frankie anymore.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
So
I think this is maybe the worst thing I had this week.
Damn, that's a zero. That's a zero. Not even a
can
0.5.
Can we go lower?
Oh, negative. It's
under
negative.
Zero. Wow.
I don't like this shit. Wow.
Oh, okay, okay.
Wow. Okay.
It's under the ground.
Wow, okay.
She doesn't even want an inner presence.
Received.
No.
You know, I have a toddler. I've seen what it looks like for a human to
reject
food.
We're going to have to smudge after this to
like
get
that.
You back where you need to be.
All right. This is 7.5. It's great.
I don't know why I picked that one.
For a healthy snack, I'm in.
I'm going to go... Five.
I don't really like y'all no more. It's like my stomach.
It also matches your outfit.
I do like the color. It matches everything.
Can I get a point from
that? You're telling me that you're telling me that the combination of sweet potato and cinnamon is not a godly combination, is what you're
telling
me.
That's a cute purse.
Just like the Balenciaga purse.
That's right.
The Balenciaga tamale purse.
Yeah.
Shout out Luke.
Don't let Balenciaga see this.
Yeah, it's okay. Down to the left. It's okay. And we didn't even talk about fashion, but we'll do that.
Down to jamming with Gucci.
I know. Okay. It's a new day. It's a
Cut
new
it
era.
Out. Yes.
No fashion talk, unfortunately.
Okay.
Erykah Badu, thank you so much for being here.
Yes.
What a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you also in advance for blessing the newsroom with a performance. That is our show. Every episode of Popcast is at nytimes.com/popcast. Find us on YouTube where you can subscribe. Press the button. Subscribe, TikTok, Instagram, at Popcast on all platforms. Credits and link in bio. We'll be back next week. What is violence? Violence. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That's it.